Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Canada Day, long weekend. It's right here. It's around the corner. So, yeah, you can crank that country. You can head out to a lake. You can head out to a body of water. Have yourself a time. Crack a few BLs.
Hey, we get Canada Day off, too. A rare treat for us.
You better believe it. Don't call me. I'm also I'm observing the 4th of July. Not because I care about America, because I just care about hangovers and I'm old. So it's like, yeah, I'm gonna rip a 2-day recovery, which is the way I need to do it right now. John Morosi, MLB Network Insider, a guy who kind of sneaky does get to celebrate both. Like, you get to be a bit of an honorary Canadian. We'll let you in on Canada, and you are an American, so obviously you get 4th of July. What's up, buddy?
Well, thank you very much for that. I appreciate that. You know how Canada, how important Canada is to our family. We were actually there last weekend. We went as a family, drove over to beautiful Leamington and Kingsville, that area, Colchester, beautiful spot. So spent some time there with my family. And it was just a beautiful way to spend the weekend.
You're such an honorary Canadian that you just ripped off three places, and I was like, never heard of any of those.
I'm like, Leamington, like, yes. Leamington. Very hot spot.
Leamington, hometown of Darren McCarty.
Okay.
Just on the other side of the bridge.
Is that why you went, you Red Wings bird? You were just like, where did McCarty grow up?
Okay, well, I did tell my kids this is the hometown of number 25, very important player in the history of the Red Wings. Go back
King.
March 26, 1997. Had to make sure we shared I haven't shown them the full video yet, obviously, of the brawl, Fight Night at the Joe. But it was great that we were there. It was not necessarily the motivating reason for why we chose it. It's a beautiful area. If you've not been, it is, and I didn't really know this when we got there, Ontario's wine country. Beautiful spot.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
It's beautiful out there. I just looked it up, other famous people from Leamington. Danny Klassen, former MLB player.
There you go.
Everybody know him?
Right on. No, I was, okay.
That's right. They're pumping out all-stars out there.
I really do want that Red Wings Avalanche doc. I don't know if I've missed it, whether or not it's already started. It is out now?
I watched it.
You watched it?
Yeah.
How was it?
Yep. Excellent. And obviously those were very very formative. Very formative years of me for as a young hockey person to watch those, especially those two Western Finals back-to-back years. Brought back a ton of memories. Also just reminded me of how spiteful it was during that time and why. I mean, that and the reaction of Chris Draper's teammates to support him, and obviously Chris still has a huge role with the Wings. He's getting ready for the draft as we speak, a week away. So it brought it all to the present, and there was actually there's a couple moments that I wasn't even aware of Claude Lemieux's stronger connections to a couple Wings, both of that era and of the present day. I don't want to spoil it for you. You got to watch it.
Pretty
cool note.
I guess I thought it was going to end up getting a little bit more headlines because, if you are my age, that's like the time you got into hockey. It's like the first real rivalry that you were brought in on and that I cared about. And I can't wait to see it. And I'm going to watch it absolutely whenever I can find access to it. But it did go a little bit under the radar here considering like how big that rivalry was. Like, I joked about it, but when they had the old-timers game or whatever, the Heritage Classic old-timers game, that's the only one that I cared about because people went like, holy crap, these guys might actually, like, these guys are all going to be there? Like, these guys, hey, we might see some guys chucking ducks. We might see, like, a little bit of old-time hatred. Like, they actually, those guys sort of treated it like it was a real game. Guys were getting in shape and, Draper, he's that guy's a legend. Like, he's still, like, road dog. Like, goes out and sees people on, like, goes and scouts and does his own thing, like does the tough hours, does the tough road trips. Crazy that guy still does that given the resume. Anyway, baseball stuff, Johnny.
Sure.
How big are demands for relievers right now? Because we just watched a baseball game with two teams that could not get outs past the fifth inning.
Well, the prices are high, and I do think the Jays will get at least one reliever between now and August 2nd. But we always hear it, and that we're hearing it again this time of year, prices on relievers are very, very high. And it depends on probably who you're calling. You could look at a team like Kansas City, who is very much open for business. Benintendi is available. Would they consider moving some of their bullpen pieces? I suspect the answer there is yes. And I think we have to keep a close eye on that club, because I think we've already seen them. They've already traded Carlos Santana. So the Royals are certainly open for business, I would say, and whether it ends up being someone like Scott Barlow, I mean, that might be a really high price to pay because he can close. But they have a couple guys. I would mention Dylan Coleman as well as being a possibility. But I think prices are very high, and it's because of games like you saw last night. There are a lot of contending clubs that have some bullpen issues. And I think with the Jays in general, just looking at their month of June collectively, I think they've given up more runs than all but one other team in the American League. And yet they're still above 500 because their offense has really been the offense that we expected over the last month or so. But the pitching remains inconsistent. And so I think if they can find a way to smooth over, especially that middle part, obviously the part of the game where Thornton gave it up last night, that bridge from the starters to the late inning crew, I think that's where they're really going to have to address it, and I think they will. All indications are that they'll probably add at least one reliever, maybe two, and I would expect that to be a key storyline for them in the next month.
Yeah, and like, hey, listen, bullpen ERA isn't a perfect stat at all, but if you look at the last month and you go bullpen ERAs, Toronto is among the worst. They got a bullpen ERA that's north of 4. It's almost 4.5. They're there with Pittsburgh and Washington and the Cubs and the Royals and Cincy and Colorado. Like, this is not good company to be keeping right now. Like, they're even worse than where a lot of the other, like, quote-unquote contenders are. Like, there's like kind of a meaty middle of teams that are still in the mix right now in the standings of the American League. And, like, I'm talking about, like, yes, of course, the Red Sox, the Twins could use some help in that regard. Like, yes, absolutely. But Toronto is just in dire straits. And I wonder, okay, so we mentioned a couple of those Royals names because, yeah, that team is, I think, 15 games out of their division. Their season's done. Of course they're selling. They don't care. You offer the right price right now. But this is the thing we keep coming back to, is like the level of desperation for the Jays. If they lose that game last night and they lose it in that fashion, especially with Jimmy Garcia hurt, the narrative today is only like, JD, make sure you ask John, like, when, who? But I do kind of want to know, like, who are the other, are there any names right now outside of Kansas City that you're hearing linked to the Jays? And I would assume that if those names that you're hearing are, that they would also be linked to the Red Sox, and that we actually might see a situation where these two divisional teams are driving up the price on one another.
I think you're exactly right. And I think that when you look at, I think Oakland is one more possibility, and obviously they've had some of their key guys go down with injuries, but Acevedo's been pretty good. Zach Jackson's been pretty good. I think that, and listen, candidly, also you're going to have to check, and this is going to be the unique part of this deadline, any reliever the Jays look at has to be vaccinated. This is part of any player they're looking at has to be vaccinated. So you kind of look at, obviously it is the ultimate truth-telling moment, I suppose, before a series begins at Rogers Center. You see the visiting team and how many players they put on their restricted list. And those guys, you would say, no matter how good they are, if they're on the restricted list when they come to Canada, they're not on the Jays list to get at the deadline. So I think it's obviously a unique feature of this year's trade deadline, to say the very least, that we're watching carefully. But I do think Oakland would make a move for a reliever. And I think in general, you're spot on about how close the bidding is and how common the needs are, especially between the Red Sox and Blue Jays, because you look at the way that this AL East is playing out, and of course, we know last year the Jays would have been that a third wild card team. We would have had three wild card teams from the East itself, and that's also been the case for the majority of the season this year, where you would have seen three teams from the AL East, and I think that it's trending in that direction unless the second place team in the Central just benefits from a ton of games against the Tigers and the Royals and is able to sort of prop themselves up to the point that they're, because of relative schedule favorability, they end up eclipsing the fourth place team in the East, which is possible based on the strength of schedule. I would also mention, speaking of the Tigers, I do think Michael Fulmer is one more name to watch if you're the Jays. I think the Jays are in a spot where Romano has been able to close well enough. Now, he's not been as dominant lately as he was to begin the season. You don't need to get a closer. I think that you just need somebody, and if they can close, great. But I don't think it's a necessity to have that as part of the resume, and I think that's going to help them eventually land some names, because Fulmer, for example, can close, but you don't need him to, because I do think Romano on most nights, last night being one of them, can pitch well at the end of the game.
Yeah, I looked at that. It's funny because, like, the Red Sox have this bullpen where they're doing, like, they've done closer by committee for times. Robles has been a nightmare. I think they have now 15 blown saves. They need the Romano type. The Jays need the guys to get to Romano. Like, they need the Schreibers. Yeah. Like, they've just kind of got some pieces that are not perfectly aligned, but both teams need swing and miss at the end of the bullpen, guys who can come out and get big outs. And so, yeah, it really does feel like those prices are going to be insane, and it feels like there's even a trickle-down effect right now where some of the other relievers that aren't even, like, the back-end stud bullpen guys are at a pretty high cost right now, because I can't imagine a team like the Jays that already did this last year when they went out and got Simber and Richards is looking at their bullpen right now and knowing that they have these games against Boston and against Tampa, these teams that they're just scrapping and clawing with, that they know, like, this played out for them last year where they missed the playoffs by a game, and these games in June that they blew to these divisional opponents, like, that's what bit them in the ass. So I just imagine that, yeah, missing this way again is unacceptable, and the only reason that they're not making moves right now and that they're signing Sergio Romo off the scrap heap is that, like, the trickle-down has affected every reliever, even the mediocre ones.
Correct. And I would point out, too, we'll see, I think, in the next week to 10 days, teams start to declare themselves where they're at, you know, buy or sell. I think one team to watch carefully would be the Angels. Obviously, they've been, you know, they fired Joe Maddon, and then they're the brawl, and you see Bradley now is out for a while after he injured himself in the brawl. I would mention a couple familiar names in that bullpen, both Tapera and Loop, obviously known well to the Jays. You know, those are the kind of guys that I think if you've got, you know, Loop and Tapera, both who have thrown decently well for the Angels this year, I think that they would just add a little bit of stability and familiarity, obviously, with the organization. But the Jays, to your point, JD, that they're lucky that they don't need to go out there and ask the Angels for Raisel Iglesias, their all-star closer. They need a Tapera or a Loop. That's exactly what they need. And I think the price for that component at some point in time will come down, because those teams that have those relievers tend to like to move them. It just might not happen until the last days of July or potentially August 2nd.
Okay, so then the other way that this can go, right, John, is, all right, relief pitching market is insane. Everybody's competing for the same people. Obviously, everybody needs starting pitchers, but the Jays just kind of need innings. Like, they could use a swingman, because right now they're using Trent Thornton. He's actually been okay. When they put him in leverage, it's been dangerous, but he hasn't been the worst thing about this team. But they have to move Ross Stripling in and put him in this role. He's been excellent, but it's left them void of a swingman, a depth starter. And you've seen these games now where they get two innings from Yusei Kikuchi and they feel like they're completely screwed. Do you think that the Jays are going to be competitive in, like, the deeper starting pitching market here over the coming month?
I do. I do think they will be. Because, or at least finding that type of versatile arm who might be able to be the Swiss Army knife, so to speak, and pitch in the bullpen and then come in and spot start or basically have, as you describe, that Stripling role. It was a very good description, JD, of what's happened, because I think when you put Stripling in to the rotation, you kind of realize his versatility in the role that he'd had previous to that, where he's been a staff saver for this team for a long time. You know, he's never the guy that we talk about a ton during our conversations here, but I think he has been a very, very valuable player to the Jays ever since he arrived. And I think that in some ways what's transpired with the team this year has only underscored that. So I do think they'll find a way to get a depth starter. And those types of guys might be, as you look at it in rosters turnover, they might be a little more available in a couple weeks' time. I do think, just from an industry standpoint, I was actually talking to one GM yesterday who just talked about how compressed the schedule is now in July. It used to be that the draft was like early June, maybe June 10th, 15th, somewhere in that range. And so that was already behind us by this point in the calendar. And so what you're having now with the draft on the 17th of July at the All-Star game is it's just 2 weeks basically before the deadline. And so the industry in general, and obviously it's different parts of your organization that work on each, the amateur draft versus pro scouting, but it just sort of taxes the bandwidth of the team, and I do think that there's like a relearning of what the industry rhythm is, because it used to be draft happened, when the draft was over, boom, trade deadline time, and now we're kind of trying to walk and chew gum at the same time, which the industry can do, but it just, I think, makes the timing of all this a little harder to pin down than it used to be, where there was that muscle memory of when the trade conversations actually started.
So the conversation around starting pitching is obviously ramped up because the Jays have been struggling, to say the least. What do you think happens with Kikuchi if he continues to play the way he is moving forward?
Well, it's a great question, because obviously this is not just a one start issue. He's just had a hard time getting deep into the games, and his rotation spot. For now, I don't know if we would say that it's in jeopardy on this day, but I do think that it's trending in that direction, where you're starting to wonder, is there an injury at play here? Why is he struggling so much to get deeper into games? But I think it's a great point, and one that I think the Jays have to look at, because it's a really hard way to win. They were able to come back and overcome it last night. Fortunately for them, the offense has been there on many more nights than not, especially in the month of June. But you're not going to be able to slug your way through the playoffs. It's just the pitching is too good. You're not going to be able to do it. And I think that's where the pitching is going to have to get solved. Now, obviously, if you think about a playoff series, he probably wouldn't start a game in it, but the Jays are so far away from qualifying for a playoff round right now. They've got a lot more months to go you need him or someone to fill that spot. So I think you're right on, and I would say that he probably has another start or two, and if it keeps on this trend, you start looking down to the minor leagues or elsewhere to make a move and to find a way to fill that gap. I mean, fortunately, the All-Star break is coming, and maybe you can finesse the rotation a bit with off days between now and then to minimize the number of times his turn comes up. But at some point in time, the Jays have to have an answer for that spot in the rotation and how he's pitching right now.
So this is obviously fluid, and it depends on health, and this is a real kind of tougher hypothetical for you, but I do kind of just want to get your feel on what could happen here with the Blue Jays catchers. They've got three guys, and Moreno has come up, and he's acquitted himself well. He threw out his fourth base runner last night. That's 4-9. He looks comfortable behind the plate, and he looks comfortable at the dish. Like, he's a guy that the scouting report has translated to Major League Baseball so far. Obviously, the Jays aren't under the gun to trade one of these catchers, but if they were to shop the likes of a Danny Jansen, what do you think his actual value around baseball would be? Would he be a significant trade chip in the market? Because I honestly do not know.
He would be, yes. I think that's the short answer. There are teams that really need catching, and it's so rare to have a catcher available who obviously can, you know, play both sides of the ball as well as Jansen can. And you look at how much time he's got left. He still has 2 years of, yeah, of control beyond this year. And so for me, it's a really intriguing thing to think about, because Kirk should be an all-star. Moreno has arrived and is as advertised, as you point out, is batting better than 300. So for me, and again, the Jays were reminded of this when the injury to Jansen occurred basically right around the same time that that Moreno came up. But he, so it's catching is a fickle position because you could easily lose somebody. But by the same token, Jansen deserves to start, and I think that I think Ross would look at this and say, we also have to do right by him. If Moreno is ready, and it looks like he is, he's got to play. So I think the Jays have a legitimate piece to move. I mean, there's not a lot of catchers that can defend and also hit the way that Jansen can. So there's a lot of teams in the game who need catching help, teams that are even rebuilding. I think that's where it's such an interesting major league piece to be able to trade, because in many cases, if you're a rebuilding team, unless you've got a stud catcher coming up, like, you know, Kieber Ruiz has come up for the Nationals, you almost by definition need somebody who can do what Jansen does. And so I think that if you're a younger team trying to, you know, move your pitching, Jansen is an incredibly valuable guy. It also, let's remember this, there might be various three-team iterations where maybe a contender would then be calling up that rebuilding team to get Jansen from them after the trade happens. So maybe from that perspective, a Jansen trade and sort of having him as a key piece in a trade could happen sooner, because if I'm Oakland, or if I'm Detroit, or, you know, Kansas City, obviously they've got Sal Perez, but if I'm one of these organizations, I want him on my team now because he's going to make me better. Or if I can move him, there'll be a contending team that says, hey, whether it's Houston or somebody else, Jansen would make a ton of sense there. So I think it's a really interesting set of value points there for whoever ends up acquiring him.
Yeah, I guess the only reason I even ask about the value is because of the, like, lack of ability to stay healthy the last couple of years, and just the track record is tough, because it's like, hey, you have pandemic season, there's 43 games, there's only 70 games last year, there's 19 this year. And I just think we want to see what Danny Jansen is over an extended period of time. We haven't been able to see it. And it's also fearful when it's like you have a clubhouse leader the way that he is, a veteran guy who the pitching staff trusts. Like, I don't know if they end up moving him, and I would assume that if they do, it is going to come at a pretty high price point. But you just said, like, if he's available, or, you know, do you think that he is available right now?
I think that for the right price, he would be. And for me, that the reason why I say that is, you just look at the mechanics of the roster. I mean, once Moreno's ready, let's put it this way. If you look at it 3 years from now, if just we're having this conversation right now, if you ask me in 3 years, you know, what do I believe that Kirk and Moreno are the catching tandem, and or do I believe one of those two guys is the starting catcher for the Jays by then? I would say that they're both more likely to be in that role than Jansen.
Yep.
And so if you're going to make a long-term call, as painful as it seems right now to trade somebody that's been with this organization for a long time and is a first-class citizen in every way, it just is the reality of the game, and I do think that Kirk and Moreno, you know, Kirk is going to be an all-star, so I have a hard time thinking that the clubhouse would react in a negative way when Kirk isn't just promise, Kirk isn't just potential, like, he's doing it now. And I think for that reason, it's a hard trade to make, but an easy one to explain.
John Morosi, and Network Insider for MLB Network. Thank you, as always, for making time. Enjoy your double holiday weekend.
Yeah, happy early Canada Day to everybody there as well. Again, thanks just to my family. Had an amazing time over the weekend. Thanks for always being, as a country, so gracious to our family. We always love coming up.
You're welcome. We did it in all those places that Ailish and I just heard of. John Morosi.
Exactly.
Always great. Always great. And next time we'll catch up on that documentary once I've actually seen it. Thanks again.
Very good. Yeah, I look forward to your full review, JD. Well done. And JD and Ailish, thanks for the conversation today. Really appreciate it.
See you, pal. John Morosi, one of the best. With that, it's time for something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum. Oh, we almost missed the yum, yum, yum there. The fans were upset.
I thought you did it live. You know you can do it live. You know
I can do it, but then I don't want to step on and then
yeah, but then maybe it'll be funny if it's yum, 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 anyway, go.
Okay, I'm interested in this little bit of a change in broadcast television. So Sunday, the presentation of Tigers game against the Royals will feature no commentators in the television booth. So they're going to do something different for the holiday weekend. It will be kind of a roving tour of the stadium. And so the Sunday leadoff host and in-game reporter Ahmed Farid and Tigers outfielder and former player Craig Monroe are going to take fans like around the ballpark and give them tours, unique viewpoints, conversations with special guests and more. And so the idea of this is to give a different type of vibe to show fans that broadcast can be new and vibrant, but there won't be any broadcast commentators in the booth. So a very new thing. This will be Sunday at noon if you want to watch it. I don't know. I think it's an interesting idea to do something different, but is that going to be appealing? I know that Apple TV is kind of doing different things with MLB games this year. Are you going to be excited to watch this type of thing, or is it going too far?
I certainly won't be excited to see no announcers. Like, that would not be a thing.
They're trying to show, like, hey, back in the day, this is how baseball was consumed.
Yeah. First of all, I'm suspicious always of these things because companies are always trying to – well, they are. They're always trying to save money, and they're always trying to cut corners on things, whether it's like – you know, the pandemic not having to send color and play-by-play people on the road and how you go. They've been trying to do that for a while. That wasn't just like a pandemic thing. And now they're like stoked on it because they're saving plane tickets. And it's like, guess what? It's worse. You have a delay. We've all seen it. Like, there have been moments where you've been watching games and you're like, why is this off? Like, why is this goal announced before the puck's in the net? Or why is this not synced up? It's like, or remember when Shulman and them were talking about like, hey, we only have the cameras that they afford us. Like, no, you want to have people in the stadiums and you want to have good play-by-play and color analysts. It's why, like, I always actually tell Blue Jays fans, yo, you're stupid lucky that we have Dan Shulman, because people complain a lot about having we always try to like, let's try to spice up the broadcast, let's try to change the way broadcast is done. You don't really need to change these things. It's pretty tried, tested, and true. If you have an elite play-by-play guy in baseball, you're good. Like, you're,
I don't think it has
good.
Anything to do with money.
No,
you're suspicious that they're kind of like,
no, what I'm saying is that you're talking about ways of revamping the broadcast and ways of doing something different and showcasing something different. I don't think that this has any legs. I don't think that this will go anywhere. I think people get excited for some of these ideas and they go, this would be great. I think alternate streams are still the future of sports. It's just a matter of like who carves out the budgets for them. Where does the money come from to make these alt streams? Like, Dangle's doing them, or he just did them for the Stanley Cup playoffs, right? And to me, that's the future, is what are your viewing options? You're not just going to have one, because we're trying to, like, carve out these micro audiences in a different way. It's no longer about, like, we do these things where people go, look, they got millions of viewers for a Blue Jays game. It's like, that's nothing. That's a drop in the bucket compared to what TV used to get. It's getting smaller and smaller and smaller. So how do you capture those audiences? Well, you cater to them directly. How do you budget those things when those audiences aren't giving you a ton of money and they're in spaces that aren't used to paying? That's the part of this frontier that people are figuring out. But ultimately, what I believe is all you need is talented people. And that it's why you still continue to see places like ESPN or even places that are trying to break onto the scene like Amazon or whoever go out and pay big money for NFL voices that are caliber, right? It's why Troy and Buck and like they get the big ticket contracts still, because there's not that many people who are good at it, because it's crazy hard. And that's what I'm saying about the Shulman thing, which is like Blue Jays fans have the best play-by-play guy in the universe at baseball, and he cares about your baseball team. It's outrageous. It's so lucky. It's so lucky that he calls these games for the Blue Jays. And like, that's all you need. Baseball, hockey, you need elite play-by-play. You can kind of get away with the analysis sometimes. Again, these guys we've had here are great. Like, I think people have been pretty spoiled here. There have been some moments, I would say, in hockey where we've not had it the best. But right now, Craig Simpson, like, you can't beat that. Like, you couldn't beat Ray Ferraro for a long time. Like, there's really, really good analysts in this sport. There's really good play-by-play people. Like, they brought in Cuthbert. I think that it's kind of, like, I would say it's he's sort of indisputably the best in the entire planet right now, too, at that. I look at this right now, and I just think that's what you need. You just need good broadcasters, and you're fine. You don't need to revamp things. It's when you go on the cheap and you try to bring in, like, whatever, and just try to get away with it by not putting people on the road or not bringing in the best talent or really trying to go cheap on the analysts. That's where it bites you in the ass, and that's where it turns into, like, you need to revamp the broadcast. It's like, no. The broadcast stuff is usually fine. The same thing is true. You need talented people with chemistry. Just that costs more money. That's it. So, yeah, that was a long something to chew on. Anyways, let's take a break before I get fired. That was something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats. Something else to chew on. What's going to happen in an NBA free agency? Because that's going to happen over Canada Day weekend. One of my absolute favorites, Justin Termini, co-host of NBA Today on Sirius XM Radio, next on the Fan Morning Show with JD and Ailer, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Everything you need to know about the Blue Jays, Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 of The Fan. I'm JD Bunkus. We talked earlier about media people who tell it like it is. That is 1,000,000,000% our next guest. Justin Termini, co-host of NBA Today on Sirius XM NBA Radio. What's up, buddy? How we doing?
I'm doing well. It's about to get busy, so maybe a little burnt out here.
Yeah, well, it's like, this is it. You're in the home stretch, friend. Like, you're here. Like, you just got to get through one more week of Kyrie Irving content, and then it's just, you're into the summer. Like, you can just relax for a little while and check in whatever the phone buzzes with an NBA trade. You're close. You're very, very close.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thankful, though, that I do have a bunch of time off over the summer, because especially if it's something where, like, Kyrie dominates, because last year I had, I get 6 weeks off over the summer. Last week it was Ben Simmons, and I would have got sick of it like after 3 days, and that thing dragged on for like 2 months.
Yeah, and it turned out to be immensely important, right? Like, look how many titles it's going to swing. Ben Simmons, if he ever plays. Okay, so we got to start with the Kyrie thing. Bobby Marks brought up something that was pretty interesting yesterday. He said, like, hey, they could actually still trade this guy. This is his quote. The Nets are even hesitant to extend him off his current number here. So he's on this 1 year deal. He could still be traded. He doesn't have a no trade clause, and it opens up the landscape for all 29 teams if there's a trade out there for Brooklyn. Do you think the Nets would actually have the guts right now to stare down the barrel and say, hey, Kyrie, you opted in, we're moving you?
Well, I don't think it's the guts, like, with Kyrie, because I think they would
part ways with KD.
Kyrie. It's all about Kevin Durant. And it's amazing that they even play these games with Durant, because he's the top 15 player of all time. So I think that tells us, like, what they think of Kyrie Irving and, like, how much of a distraction he's been the last couple of years for him. And it's just not like, you know, and that's why other teams I don't think have interest either. Like, the other teams are all interested in, okay, if they move Kyrie, does KD become available? I'm not sure of anybody who's just, like, all in on Kyrie outside of the Lakers who need to do something desperate.
Yeah, the Lakers are the only losers here, and it's funny because, like, it's like seeing their fan base react on social media to this news of him not going there. It's like, oh, yeah, now you kind of are a little hopeless here. Like, I don't know what you end up doing. But this is the question I have with Kyrie is, do you think that this experience, because what you just said is bang on, right? Nobody really wanted this guy. If there was a huge market for Kyrie, he wouldn't be a Brooklyn Net. He just opted into a one-year deal. Do you think that this experience is enough that it will materially affect the way he handles next season?
Yeah, I mean, you would think, like, and this is, like, really how we led off the show yesterday in SiriusXM NBA Radio, is, like, you would think that this would be something where, like, all right, now he wants to come back and prove that he can be an elite player, that he can, you know, get through a season healthy, that he can be a good teammate, that he's worth the max contract moving forward. Like, that's how it would typically impact, like, a normal person. But Kyrie does so many things, like, out of left field. I'm not sure that's going to impact him that way. And Brian Windhorst even brought this up on ESPN, is that the Nets aren't confident that he's going to come back and be the good soldier, which is amazing because, you know, then it's going to impact maybe the next contract that he gets. So I would anticipate that it would make somebody behave and fall in line and put together a great year. But I'm not sure. Maybe he's going to be even more belligerent because he's taken advantage of the Cavaliers, the Celtics, the Nets in the past when they've handed him the keys to the organization. And that's when they were supposed to have a good relationship. And now clearly the relationship is severed.
Yeah, see, I'm more in that camp. Like, I would have, if I was the Nets, the second I saw that the statement he put out, where it was like normal people do normal things or they make the world go around statement, I was like, oh yeah, we gotta trade this guy. He is not. If that's not the statement of a guy who's like, I'm all bought in on the Nets and I realize that I have a year with Kevin Durant, like you said, one of the 15 best players of all time, and that we wanted to finish the job. It's like, no, he gave the post where I read it like 32 times and didn't really understand it, and I went, yeah, this is just all they've done here is kick a problem down the line, right? Like, you kicked the problem from this week.
He did the normal thing too.
Yeah,
like it was taking that extension was the normal thing. If he was doing the thing, like the different people, you know, or leaders, like, he would have taken the $6 million. So I don't know what he's patting himself on the back for.
No, well, that's the thing Kyrie does. He pats himself on the back for literally everything he does. Like, everything is a part of a huge genius plan that he is yet to kind of reveal. But someday we're all going to look back on it and be like, wow, you know what? He was a true leader of men, Kyrie Irving. Okay, so, yeah, that looks like the Nets plan, which is, this is what happens when you hand over franchises to superstars and mercurial ones, is, it might not work out for you. Maybe this ends up being a warning for other teams in the future, and maybe one of those other teams is the Lakers, right? Because, like, they hand the car keys over to LeBron. He becomes the GM. They end up getting Russell Westbrook, and it's a disaster. And we just mentioned it. Like, they're the team that would have taken Kyrie in a heartbeat. They were the ones that needed the revamp, the refresh, the something. So what do the Lakers do now?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, Darvin Ham, great. Okay, that's going to turn everything around, is Darvin Ham. Like, Frank Vogel's a championship-winning head coach. Frank Vogel's a really good head coach. Now, I think the Lakers made extra, you know, they might have a little extra pep in their step because now they can just use Frank Vogel as the excuse, right? And I feel bad for Vogel when they probably end up doing that and being better than they were last year, but they're still not going to be great. It's not like, hey, snap our fingers, Darvin Ham, and everything is going to be rectified. They still can't shoot, and they still have zero defense on the perimeter. So they still have massive holes. They need to do something, but, you know, they really can't. And the other thing is, like, the Lakers typically just make the splashy move, right, instead of making the intelligent one, like the little smart pickups that you have to do in order to win a championship, like Golden State. Okay, they get Andrew Wiggins when his value's not high and they turn him into something. Or Jordan Poole, they find, you know, Kevon Looney. Those aren't huge names, but they find, you know, Gary Payton II. And they make them work. Like, the Lakers have to be smart and find guys like Gary Payton II, but I'm not sure they're creative enough to.
It's funny looking back on the last season, because it's like the Sacramento Kings, it was the right thing to maybe do two trades with Sacramento. Like, the Sixers go out and get James Harden, and it doesn't really work out for them, and maybe you go, had you gone out and traded for like Halliburton and Hield and maybe a little bit of depth, that would have worked out better for you. And the Lakers, same thing. Like, had you just gotten Buddy Hield, it would have worked out better for you had you gone and traded for Russell Westbrook. I just don't know how, like, it doesn't feel like they're going to be able to get off that contract. And if they can't get off that contract, like, what do you do? Like, where's the landing spot? Who's the team now that would even consider that trade? Even for that future first-round pick, like, I don't know where he fits, like, with what the landscape is right now and what the asking price is to get off. Like, we saw the Kemba contract at the draft go, right? And it cost the Knicks the, like, 13th overall pick in the draft. And, like, that's a certainty. I don't know. Like, do you actually see them being able to move Russ?
No, I mean, maybe midway through the year, or maybe, as you know, when you only have to give him $20 million instead of 47. Yeah. You know, maybe if he becomes such, like, you know, so disenchanted and is so miserable out there, maybe he accepts a buyout midway through the year. But even if he accepts a buyout, like, what are you getting in return? You're not filling that spot with anything. So I don't see the point of a buyout. But, yeah, you're right. I don't see any way that they can get rid of that. And the other part is, like, it's just not like Russell Westbrook sits there, right? Like, Kemba Walker pretty much just sat there last year, even though he wasn't playing. He wasn't being too much of a distraction. Russell Westbrook's going to be whining and complaining and making excuses. And, you know, it's just going to be, he's going to be a distraction. He's going to be in the media. Fans are going to be booing him. He's going to be on social media. His wife's going to be on social media. So it'll be a distraction.
So who's the free agent that you care most about right now? Like, who do you think actually has a chance to move here? Because I would say that it's like Zach LaVine, Bradley Beal, James Harden are probably the three popular choices. Do you think any of those guys leaves their current spot in the coming week?
No, I do not. Now, I eventually see Bradley Beal leaving after he signs the max contract, and this is an issue the NBA is going to have to take care of. It's like he signs the contract and a year later he forces his way out because he keeps talking about the importance of winning. Well, you're not going to do that in Washington. Now, the issue is making $50 million a year. Who's going to want to trade for him? Because he's a very good player, but he's not an amazing player. Like, for example, Boston just went to the NBA Finals, right? He's friends with Tatum as well, but Boston just went to the NBA Finals. He's clearly not as good as Tatum, but is even as good as Jaylen Brown, who might be a little worse than him offensively, but is significantly better than him defensively. He's not even Jaylen Brown, so he's probably like the third best player or the 2.5 best player on the championship team. I don't think you're going to win with him as your second best unless the best player on that team is, you know, Giannis Antetokounmpo. So, like, with an average star, he's probably your third best player. So he's most likely to move, I think, down the road. I mean, I guess Jalen Brunson is the name that everybody's talking about right now. And I like Jalen Brunson, but I do not like Jalen Brunson making $25 million a year. And apparently that's what the Knicks are going to throw at him.
Dude, the Jalen Brunson thing is one of the most confusing things in my life because, again, you said it. Who doesn't like Jalen Brunson? He's like a winning player, but he's one of those guys where it's when he's on a good contract, you go, wow, this is incredible surplus value. But he's not someone that I would want to sign to a big deal. And I actually think that Raptors fans are going to be the most pissed about this because he's going to change the market for Fred VanVleet. Like, Fred VanVleet is being used as a comp for him right now. And that's my theory on this, is that a couple of summers ago, the Knicks had a chance to get Fred and they never even, like, they had cap space. He was available. They never offered him a deal. And now Jalen Brunson's available. He's like, I don't know, either the lesser or the better, depending on who you are, version of Fred. And now the Knicks are coming over the top with this outrageous offer. I think the question for you is just like, okay, obviously paying Jalen Brunson in a vacuum like that is insane. Like, it doesn't change anything for the Knicks. But do you think that's a domino for the Knicks or the plan for the Knicks?
You would hope that it's a domino. And again, you keep hearing stuff about
Hope is not good if you're a Knicks fan.
It's like you don't trust it because it's him, just like with Kyrie, because it's them. It's just like with Kyrie Irving. It's like, okay, the normal person, you would expect them to go, all right, I got to prove something this year. Maybe he doesn't do that. And with the Knicks, it's like, okay, a normal team, it would just be a domino, but maybe it's not with them. Maybe it's the end all. But you are hearing stuff about, like, maybe they're interested in DeJounte Murray as well. And okay, maybe that would definitely change my viewpoint if they had Jalen Brunson and DeJounte Murray and they have R.J. Barrett already, and maybe, you know, Julius Randle could turn it around a little bit, then everything looks a little bit better. If that's the end all, then it's a problem for the Knicks. And the other part is, that is what you said, is that, yeah, it impacts the rest of the league, because you know how many guys think that they're, you know, and rightfully so, better than Jalen Brunson. Again, not that he's not a good player, but, you know, what is he, the 60th best player in the NBA, if that?
Well, we just watched an entire postseason series where they were like, it was all Luka, and we went, all right, yeah, Brunson gives you something on any given night, but no one was looking at that and saying, it's the Luka and Brunson team. You know, like, it was never that. In fact, I would say that there were, like, stretches where you'd go, like, Dorian Finney-Smith is, like, the second most important guy on this team. Like, they're just – I never have once thought, oh, my God, this guy's a franchise-changing player. I've always thought he's a good player. That's the type of guy that – it's like, how long have you followed this league? Again, we're talking to Justin Termini, like, and it's just – these contracts don't work out. Like, when you overpay the non-superstar, like, we just talked about Bradley Beal. You pay Bradley Beal the max, it's probably going to bite you in the ass down the line, and that's somebody who like led the NBA in scoring 2 years in a row. Jalen Brunson is a much lower class of player who has shown way less than him, and like, some of the numbers I've seen for these deals for him are outrageous. And it's just like, you're the Knicks. How many guys, like, you just gave Julius Randle one of these deals, and he was a mediocre middle of the pack guy, and what happened? A year later, it's arguably the worst contract in the NBA. Like, I just don't understand how it's this team doing this again, like, that they're this desperate where they would be willing to move off the 13 pick to try sign Jalen Brunson. Like, it just, I feel like I'm taking crazy pills with this organization sometimes.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, my stomach is churning over the fact that, like, hey, maybe we're going to get Bradley Beal this type of money. Bradley Beal has a much bigger track record than Jalen Brunson.
Of course.
And is the better player than Jalen Brunson. So if I'm getting a little bit queasy about giving Bradley Beal that money, you can imagine how you're feeling about giving Jalen Brunson that money.
No, it's insane. There's just absolute... anyway, yeah, the Julius Randle, Jalen Brunson team, I'm sure will lead the Knicks to many, many titles. Yeah, it'll be great. Justin Termini, again, co-host of NBA Today on SiriusXM NBA Radio. Love the show, love the work. Thanks for making time today, pal.
Thanks, but you did get me fired up a little bit too early. Now I got to spend the next, like, 8 hours prior to the start of the show, bro. You know, probably on the same level.
Yeah, you'll figure it out. I trust it. I think the show will still be great. Thanks again for making time. We appreciate it as always.
All right, appreciate you having me on.
Justin Termini, co-host of NBA Today on SiriusXM NBA Radio. Yeah, this always gets back to, like, what we talk about with organizations. Like, the Raptors make a weird move, and you go, well, maybe this will work out because they have a track record of success. Not with so much signing free agents, but I just mean, like, with a draft pick. I should say, if the Raptors draft somebody, we should be right now in a position where you don't question it as much. There have been some misses, but the hits have been just, like, way, way, way out of whack. And then there are just some organizations where it doesn't matter what they do, you got to go, no, I do not believe that this is going to work out. And the Jalen Brunson story has got to be one of the weirder ones. Like, we have Ariel Helwani in a few minutes, and I'm guessing that he's even, like, listening to this conversation because he's a guy who wants to be prepared, and he knows that I'm going to attack him with the Knicks. He knows that, like, he's going to try to attack me, and then, but I'm going to win because I'm just better at this than he is by, like, a significant margin. And so he'll do his prep, he'll do his homework, he'll try to sell himself on the Knicks. But that's the toxicity of being a Knicks fan, is that you have to try to believe in these crazy things like Julius Randle and paying Jalen Brunson $30 million. Anyway, the thing for Raptors fans that's a little scary here is that there's no way that Fred doesn't see whatever this number is and demand at, like, this more, this plus off the Jalen Brunson deal. He's actually won. He's made an all-star team. He's the better defensive player. You could argue who you'd rather have right now because Brunson is younger than Fred, and so that's the kind of, like, difficulty in this and how the contracts are going to age. It's going to be a tough one for the Raptors because, again, Fred's going to be entering his 30s, and how long are you willing to give Fred VanVleet a contract when he hasn't been able to stay healthy throughout his career, and he's 6 feet tall, and he doesn't get to the rim. Like, it's going to be a conversation, but Jalen Brunson has made that conversation more difficult.
Does Jalen Brunson have any major injury concerns, or has he?
Not that I can recall. Mm-hmm. I don't remember a big Jalen Brunson injury. But either way, I just think that this is going to change the way that Fred approaches what his number is moving forward. Ariel Helwani, a guy who makes more than even Jalen Brunson. That's next on the Fan Morning Show. JD and Ailish, Sports at 590 The Fan.